All right, Jeff, what do you say? We take it to the max. So I am here with Jeff Tesh. Jeff, you are the CEO of RCN Capital. I know that you've been there for a while. I want to hear your whole backstory, though. Take me back to baby Jeff when you got into this industry. Take me through it all. I want to hear it.
All right, LaDonna, here we go. So, flashback to 2010, and for all the listeners out there, not a great time in the mortgage world. But I was good friends with a wealthy software inventor and investor. And we got together and we decided to start a private lending company that focused on what was the biggest problem in the U.S. at that time, which was foreclosures and short sales. And there was a real lack of money available to investors to buy all of these opportunities in space. So we're like, let's build a business really focused on giving investors capital, not only to buy properties, but to fix them and put these homes back into the marketplace for families to live in. And that has how we started almost 15 years ago, LaDonna, and we've been working on it ever since.
Wow. I did not know that. I had no idea. That is so amazing. You've had a bit of success since then. You've kind of grown things just a little bit at RCN. I want to talk to you a little about culture there. We're going to side rail and then we're going to come back to the real points of this. I know a lot of your team. I've been working in and around this space since 2012 on the mortgage education side of things. And over that time, I've been able to come up and meet so many people on your team. I've worked expos with them. Some of them really are my closest friends. You have a knack for picking some of the coolest people in the industry to work on your team. Talk to me a little bit about the type of culture that you have at RCN and how you've been so successful in just keeping those types of individuals around you.
So it's interesting. Going back even further from when we started RCN Capital. So I graduated from college and I started opening Subway restaurant franchises. So I did that for almost 20 years and I built them. I managed them. I ran them. I worked in them. I did every job that you would see someone in that style restaurant do. I made some money. I started investing in real estate. And that's kind of how I got interested in the whole private lending thing. But your question is about culture. And I believe that a lot of the DNA and the roots of the culture that we have been working in, I said we, because it's not just me, it's our amazing leadership team at RCN, was born in how I, you know, grew up through my 20s and my 30s. In being in a job where you did it all, right? And there was no sense of this is how it's going to be or else. It was all hands on deck and you got the job done. And obviously, you know, the restaurant world, especially the franchise world, which is actually somewhat pretty much regimented, like there's a way to do things and do them properly, but it is a restaurant, right? So it brings the chaos out in the world without a doubt. What I learned growing up in the 20s and 30s, definitely I brought over when we started RCN in 2010, which was a culture of no job is ever above me. And whoever you are coming onto the RCN team, it is going to be an inclusion of one and making sure that you are part of the team. Your suggestions are respected and your suggestions are brought into the decision-making process. And if you are somebody who doesn't believe in that collaborative work environment, then this is not an environment for you. And in the mortgage business, as I figured out, you know, moving along, some people fit that mold, other people don't. And depending on where they came from, whether it be a banking hierarchy, depending on if it was an independent mortgage broker, depending on where they came from and how they built their careers, often dictated on what type of regiment that they were used to. But at the end of the day, our regiment was going to be one of inclusion and making sure that every voice was heard. And at the end of the day, we were going to push this thing together. And it's just how we've done it. And the management team embraces that theory, and we love it. We really do love it.
It's worked. It has worked for you. So kudos to you in that regard, because I think that is such a special atmosphere that you've created there. And again, shout out to your team for being a part of that success. I think that is so amazing. With that being said, you mentioned that while you were in the franchise space, that's kind of when you started dabbling more into real estate, moved and kind of explored the private side of things. Was there a specific reason why you wanted to get into the private side of things? What about it kind of sparked your interest?
Yeah, it was interesting because I certainly learned about private lending, hard money back in the day, right? Like when I was buying investment properties. And I always knew that it was easier and it was faster. Back then, it necessarily wasn't cheaper, but it solved problems for you as an investor. And when we started RCN Capital, that was a big sell for us, which is we're solving problems for the investor. The investor, because, yeah, I mean, everybody on this podcast right now that was in the mortgage business back in the day, you remember what it was like, right? Like there was just opportunities everywhere, opportunities to buy houses that you couldn't believe what the bank was selling them for. But those opportunities are no good if you didn't have the money to buy them, right? And that was the solution that we brought to the marketplace. And what we believed was that those capital commitments were actually going to be a meaningful change, right? We were going to try to change the way things were being done, which is going to the bank and the bank saying, no, well, we're going to have private capital. There's any number of ways we raise it, whether it be funds, our own money. Eventually, as the company grew, we were able to get lines of credit. But at the end of the day, it was going to be our money or money that we control to make those decisions. And that speed and that access to capital was what we believe today is the hallmark of what we do. It's our calling card on how you as an investor can move things faster and more expeditiously.
I love that. Two kind of points that came up in my mind. One, you mentioned being that you started it in 2010. It was a totally different real estate landscape then. I was in title insurance back then. And so I was with you in watching and seeing as the market was going through this deep, deep ebb, we'll call it, instead of the flow at the market. And how different it was to have so much foreclosed property. And so cheaper property that was available versus, let's fast forward 15 years to the market that we're in now, where inventory is such a huge issue. Walk me through the past couple of years, particularly, I would say, in the post-COVID era. But again, take it back as far as you'd like.
Yeah,
what you've seen.
It's a great question because people wonder, like, you know, how are you growing in such a competitive environment from a standpoint of lack of inventory, higher rates?
Yeah.
But it really goes back to COVID, which was like the scariest time ever, right? Like you just woke up one day and
felt like the world was ending.
Right. You know, aside from all the health risks, the business risk, what was going to happen? Were we going to be able to close mortgages? How was anybody going to go buy a property? How was anybody going to rent a property? Like, all these questions we had. And over the course of that summer of 2020, those answers became pretty apparent in the real estate fashion. And actually, the mortgage world got answers way quicker than anybody else. You know, people found solutions, remote showings, and things happened, right? But The biggest change was the demand for housing really spiked because people wanted out of multi into single. And that caused the inventory to really shrink, especially for our investors buying fix and flips. And then even more than that, the focus left from buy, fix, and rehab to buy and rent because so many people wanted into single family homes. Mm-hmm. And that trend that started in 2020 hasn't changed. The housing inventory got sucked up very quickly. The lack of construction during COVID and post-COVID has not helped, although I will give the national builders credit. They are building, and they are building expeditiously, but it's just still not enough. And the reality is that shortage in housing has led to a demand for rental, half of it because of the lack of the ability to buy. I would argue the other half is folks now today like to live in a house where they know they don't have to be for the next 10, 20, or 30 years. That was another outcome of COVID. And it really changed our business model, which is, yeah, we're still a buy, provide money for you to fix up that beaded house and sell it into the marketplace for a family. But we've become a tremendous lender of mortgages for folks buying rental properties because of the demand for rental properties. It has been a total change in focus, not intentionally on our part, but what has happened in the marketplace across the U.S. Is well documented. The demand for single family rental housing is at record levels, and it just hasn't. It all started during COVID.
I had a house that I purchased in 2018. It had to be 2017, 2018, somewhere in there. And it was a fix and flip. It was built in 1950. Jeff, you would love the story of this house. I should send you pictures of it just so that you can see exactly what can happen with it. It had belonged to, you know, druggy family who at one point had left their man doors open, and there had been 40 feral cats in there. Mind you, we found all of this out after we had purchased the house, but they came in, they ripped everything out, they gutted it, they basically made it into a brand new home. We were the first ones in it. I loved that house so much. I actually moved in 2020, much like a lot of people. I saw what was happening and decided to leverage it, take advantage of it. Otherwise, I would still be in that house because I loved it so much. So fix and flips to me are my own little passion piece of the industry, because I do love the charm that comes along with some of those older homes that just, they need that facelift. They need that restoration in order to be reintroduced into the market. And I think that's such an amazing opportunity for investors to jump in on. So love that perspective. Thank you for that.
Sure.
What has been one of like your favorite deals that you've seen that maybe RCN has been able to lend on, something that wouldn't have happened otherwise? Do you have a specific example by chance?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing because that story about that home that you ended up buying, it's repeated across the United States over and over again, which is you have these beautiful streets, and for one reason or another, there's a problem on the street, right? And that those neighbors, their families, and they just want that problem to not be there. Mm-hmm. So when an investor comes in and buys that home and makes it livable, like, it's special. It's really special because we know that the good that is going to come out of that home that was previously unlivable, it's more than just an investor making a buck. It's more than the family that gets to live in the home and become part of a neighborhood. It's the entire local community that now has a sigh of relief that that home is now part of their community. I mean, I would say that that is the biggest thing, Ladonna, over and over. And you know, like I said, we've been doing this for 15 years and we've seen this story happen so many times, and it's just rewarding. It really, and it's business, but right. That reward of that sea change in that, on that local street in anywhere USA, it's real.
You're right. And that wasn't a component that I had linked together up until you were saying that, is then after my house was restored and reintroduced into the market, because of that, the consequential properties around us that then went up for sale, they did the exact same thing too. And maybe not that investor per se, but another one would. And we got to watch over the span of a couple of years as that older neighborhood was revived. And it was a really lovely thing to get to witness. So that is a very good point that I hadn't really thought about. I hadn't linked together. And so that is a really great service that people can do for some of those aging areas. And let's be honest, there's a lot of that out there right now. What is the average age of an American home at this point? I want to say that it's 30 something years.
Yeah. I think last time I heard it was 36.
Yeah.
And growing rapidly because of the lack of new construction, with almost 5% of the US stock unlivable right now, which is like mind boggling. Like, how could you have almost 5% of the US housing stock being classified as unlivable in this hot of a market? But it's right. Just the nature of the aging housing stock of the US.
Yeah, no, you're right. What do you see happening kind of coming up in the future with this area? Do you think, okay, let's make that question into a couple of questions. One, what advice would you have to people who want to become investors in finding fix and flips? What would your advice be to them?
So first off, there are real estate investment clubs all over this country. When I say clubs, I'm referring to local organizations with local meetups that have a couple times a month, at least once a month, somewhere in your town or an adjacent town. These REIAs, they call them, REIA. They're investment education associations. And usually you pay whatever, 10, 20 bucks to get in. They might have some snacks and there'll be some sponsors there talking about either construction or could be financing. These local meetups are just a wealth of knowledge for what's happening in your local communities. And oftentimes local investors will give a case study of a house that they flipped. Maybe a mortgage professional will come up and talk about how they financed it. This sort of boots on the ground local education is just tremendous. And it's really grown into sort of a cottage industry across the US. And it really provides the newbie who's looking to dip their toe into investing a way to do it and get that local flavor. LaDonna, all real estate is local, right? We've heard that forever, right? Long before we were even in the business, we all knew all real estate is local. So if you can get yourself into one of these meetups, I would highly encourage it, and then, you know, sort of kick yourself around. And then if you're going to be on the mortgage side of things, there are some great organizations, whether it be independent mortgage broker associations that can really, like at RCN Capital, we have built out a self-directed training guide for folks that want to get into the commercial mortgage business. Just hit us up at info@rcncapital.com. And we'll shoot you a link. But there's so much training out there. But for the investor side of things, local is always best, LaDonna.
Okay. Let's take that and parlay it into a second part to the question. What advice would you have to an MLO who maybe has been on the conventional side of things, they're used to their typical government programs, et cetera, in branching into this space? Where would you recommend they get started? I think there's a lot of fear, and maybe not fear, maybe that's not the right word, but just apprehension for learning this private side of the industry, what would you recommend to them?
Sure. So I never on these sort of webinars, I never like to come off as self-promotional, but I'm just going to tell you our story, right?
Yeah.
Well, please. Our story was we were going to build out this national lender and we were trying to figure out how we were going to do it. And as I learned more about the mortgage business and how it works, I'm like, there are these independent mortgage brokers all over the country that are selling products for all different verticals. Most of it, obviously, owner occupied. I'm like, we need to just plug into the existing workforce out there. So that's why we're a wholesale lender, right? It was not any more complicated than that. I just didn't know any better, right? Like, it seemed to me to be the easiest way to grow a business is to use an amazingly local, educated, high-performing workforce that was eager for products. So to satisfy those that eagerness for products, you know, we built this wholesale platform. And one of the big things that we invested early on was education. Because a lot of folks on the conventional side, with like a ton of our mortgage professionals that send us deals, you know, most of their businesses in the owner-occ world, they only have some customers in the investor world. So, which is fine, no big deal. We were able to build out a self-directed platform called Amplify that we give to all our broker partners. And what it basically does, it allows them to take any number of courses to teach them and their staffs on how to actually talk the talk of being a non-owner occupied residential lender. And, you know, to your point, LaDonna, it comes off as being a little scary, right? Like, I'm going to this whole new product that I don't even understand.
Right.
The reality is most folks understand a whole lot more than you think, especially on the DSCR loans, especially on the rental loans. We are qualifying these customers on the rental income versus their W-2 income. Other than that, you know, the appraisal, the value, all that's the same. So once you get that little bit of education and you learn the process, it's not that hard of lift at all. And our Amplify tool has gone a long way in getting folks up and running pretty quickly.
Do you think is that something that sets you apart from your competitors is having that database available?
Yeah, without a doubt. And if we were really going to be serious about lending in the wholesale space, I knew we had to have a tool that would give us a competitive advantage, something that we could give to our partners free of charge to be able to educate their teams so that the burden wouldn't be on them, the burden would be on us. Mm-hmm. And that it's worked out great. And we continue to build that out all the time. It's easy to use. And not only that, it's 24/7, so you can do it whenever you have free time.
What would you say are some of the apprehension points maybe some people have in jumping in getting started? How would you combat those and show them, actually, there is a better way? What do you think are kind of some of those pitfalls?
The pitfalls are typically worry about, well, I don't want to leave what I have, right? Like, I've built a nice business lending to homeowners, and that doesn't have to change. It really doesn't. We all know, listen, the past few years have been tough go for owner-occupied loans with these rates spiking. Mm-hmm. And the rates are going to come down. We all thought they'd be down by now. I can assure you that. Even on the investor side, we would like the rates to be lower. I can assure you that. They're coming. So is Christmas. And it's only February. But the reality is we believe that taking our product and inserting it into a new vertical in an existing business is an easy way to dip your toe in the water. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. You know, when people get worried about making the change, I would urge folks, you don't have to make a change. You just need to add a new vertical. Just try it out. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. And if you get traction, then you can start putting some resources behind it. You can start buying some pay-per-click. You can buy all the other things that you do to build out your conventional mortgage business. You can do on the non-owner occupied side. But I always urge folks, just try it out. See, get some education and see how you like it.
Right. I have to completely agree with you, because diversification, as we've seen over the last couple of years, really is essential now more than ever. There are going to be so many disruptions that are going to come up that will, start really making the mortgage process look completely different. There are going to be inefficiencies solved that, we've all just kind of accepted as inefficiencies. And as those things free up time and resources, you have to diversify now more than ever in order to stay relevant. So I think it is quintessential that people jump out there and that they're willing to actually educate themselves. I know that that's a big component that we both talked about of, it's not enough just to accept what you've always been doing the way you've always been doing it.
Right. Like you and I were talking at the New England Mortgage Expo about just how many professionals we've lost in the business over the past few years, right? Like as a wholesale lender, like I don't want any more people to have to leave the business, right?
Right.
Like,
we both need the volume.
Right. Like I want these professionals working in the space, to your point. Let's try something, right? Let's try it.
Yeah, no, I love that. I do kind of a off the cuff random thought that I'm just having, because we did talk about the aging homes, which I think coincides with the aging population. We have a lot of baby boomers who don't want to leave their houses, and we know that a lot of their houses haven't been touched in renovations. They are going to most likely need a fix and flip type investment in order to reintroduce them to the market. Do you have any advice for people? Maybe that's an area that MLOs can go exploring, of how to start having conversations with that aging population. Any ideas there?
Yeah, without a doubt, especially, believe it or not, like houses come on the market every day across the U.S. that are bordering on unlivable. Mm-hmm. And typically these houses, even in today's competitive market, just aren't going to sell to families. It's critical that the mortgage professionals in local communities have a tab on what's going on to the MLS from a distress standpoint, because the way the real successful local mortgage professionals operate is they have a few go-to investors that when they see these markets come on the property, there's a connection made there. And they will not only be able to provide them with that lead, they will provide them with the ability to be able to finance that lead. And sort of having that bullpen of investors as well as professional real estate agents that specialize in distressed assets, it goes a long way when you are the one sort of consummating that deal. It goes a long, long way because they're out there, LaDonna.
Right.
They are 100% out there, and they do come on in the market every single week.
No, you're right. You're right. And I think we're going to continue to see an influx of them over the next couple of years. Naturally, we have to. We know that they're coming. What do you see as kind of the next big trends in this space over the next few years? What are you kind of predicting?
Well, the trend that's going to continue, that's really ramped up over the last 24 months, is as a private lender, my access to be able to access capital, especially on the rental side of things, that is absolutely as competitive as the traditional banks that would lend to folks in their local communities for rental housing. The access to capital that we have today is just truly a amazing, whether it be securitizations, hedge funds, insurance. There is so much appetite today for longer term paper that is performing at a high level, especially on the non-owner occupied side, that we believe that as a private lender, not only our rates, but our leverage and our access to capital is going to continue to grow. And it's going to really put the independent mortgage broker in a really good spot.
I love that. I love that. I want to be a good steward of your time. I'm sure you probably have other things that you need to get to. But if we have just a couple more minutes, I want to ask you just a few wrap-up questions.
Sure.
If you could give yourself, your younger self, one piece of advice, knowing everything that you know now, what would it be?
Oh, without a doubt, it goes back to the people. And obviously, you touched on that early on, but you kind of know the RCN family, right? So you kind of know our DNA and how it works. But for somebody who doesn't know, and actually, really, the advice is for anybody in any line of work that's going to manage people or start a business. You better think long and hard about how you're going to treat your people and the type of folks that you bring into your operation. And this advice has taken me to build a company that has exceeded not only my expectations, but my management team expectations. Our embracing of our employees and empowering them, which wasn't a heavy lift because of all I had learned. If I could have just told my younger self, I could have saved a lot of years of learning and say, this is how you do it, Jeff. Well, I'm telling all of you out there that today, empower your employees. Ask for their decisions. Doesn't mean you have to agree with it, but give them the opportunity for the input. And you'll be a better leader for it.
I love that. Being that you've seen the ebbs and flows of the last 15 years, and again, we've kind of seen it all, or so we think, how do you stay passionate about this industry?
Oh, yeah, it's not hard. For me, the industry itself is evolving, especially on my side of the fence here in the non-owner occupied. So just never a dull moment with the amount of attention that we're getting in private lending. It is not hard for me to stay engaged at all, but also I have some very specific goals for opportunities for the company. Like we would like to be able to get much bigger than we are today. And, you know, we just wrapped up our annual meetings here. And the communication to the team is we want all of you to have opportunities to grow in the company, like internal promotion and things like that. None of that happens without growth. And we believe that we're in a good spot to make that happen for the employees' advancement.
So cool. So cool. Last question. I know you're on the road a lot. I'm on the road a lot. What do you do to keep you sane? What brings Jeff Tesh joy?
I'll tell you what, the absolute number one favorite thing I do on the road is usually we're on the road for two nights, sometimes three, but usually it's like two. We'll go to a trade show. I speak. I usually only go on the road if I have some sort of speaking role. But my favorite thing, hands down, is team dinner. So usually it's night one. And team dinner means we go to a nice restaurant in whatever city we're in. And the team, sometimes we have one or two favorite vendors with us. I'm sure
I've made that dinner.
Yeah, you've made that list a couple times, but that is hands down my favorite thing. And generally, we sit around that table and we don't talk much about business. It is all about what's going on, what is happening, what's going on in your life, sports, weather, like anything but business. And that valuable time that I get to sit around with everybody, that's what keeps me sane. I love it.
I appreciate that so much. I know that you are another person who, again, just you're like me. We are human connectors. We want to connect with other people. It brings me the same amount of joy that it brings you. So I love and appreciate that answer. Jeff, I know I mentioned it in our little Max Combos, but I would be remiss if I didn't say it again. You really are one of the most beloved people in this industry, and it is not misplaced. You are a true delight. You are as kind and fun and warm in real life as you are here. So thank you. Thank you for being that. Thank you for the example that you set for so many others.
Madonna, you're making me blush. Come on. Thank you.
Say it if it wasn't true. I have had one of your competitors, as you came over to say hi, once you left, he really was like, man, that guy is just the best. So it really is true. Thank you for being here with me. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to sit down with me on Take It to the Max. I really do appreciate it. I know our paths are going to continue to cross well into the future. I look forward to it every time. Any last little bit shout outs, anything that you want to throw out before we wrap?
No, I would just say you make it really easy. You are an awesome host. You ask really good questions. Loved providing all the information to everybody. And thank you so much. Wonderful job, Madonna.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. Where can people find you? Where can they connect with you?
Sure. So absolutely. So my direct email is jtesch, T-E-S-C-H, at RCN Capital. It's capital with an A.com. For any information on programs, that Amplify training that we talked about, info at RCN Capital, that's capital with an A.com. And we'll get you signed up. We'll get you set up. It's all free and excited.
You're amazing. Thank you again for being here, Jeff. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Madonna.